Sie wollen endlich durchstarten und planen den nächsten Investitionsschritt? Dann setzen Sie auf den Sachsenkredit Universal der Sächsischen Aufbaubank. Mit einem Tilgungszuschuss von bis zu 10% für KMU, Existenzgründer, Freiberufler, große privatgeführte Unternehmen sowie Ärzte und Apotheker im ländlichen Raum. Für Investitionen bis zu 20 Millionen Euro. Mit erleichtertem Zugang zur Förderung. Alle Infos online unter sab.sachsen.de/sachsenkredit-universal.
This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Tom Murray? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Thomas Edward Murray, who went by the name Tom, was an English professor at Ohio State University when he developed a romantic relationship with one of his students named Carmen. The couple eventually married. They moved to Manhattan, Kansas in 1988 after Carmen graduated from law school. They selected this town because Tom was offered a job as a professor at Kansas State University. His specialty was linguistics. Carmen gave up the idea of being an attorney and became a mediator. In December 1998, Tom and Carmen had a daughter named Kiara. Tom wasn't too happy about this. He had reached a point where he didn't want to have any children, but Carmen insisted. A few years later, Carmen changed careers again. She became a self-proclaimed healer and was involved with a company that peddled a faith and energy healing scam. The company is now out of business, but when it was around, here was the idea it promoted. All mental and physical health pathology was caused by a disruption of interactive energy fields and negative energy. A specially trained therapist could help a client organize and reorganize themselves. This would result in electromagnetic and vibrational systems neutralizing the disruption, a restoration of balance, and the evacuation of extraneous energy. Once all this happened, the client's body could heal itself. I guess this would be necessary due to all the damage caused by hysterical laughing. In September 2002, Carmen went to a conference hosted by the company in Wichita, Kansas. When she was there, she met a social worker who lived in San Diego named Lawrence Philip Lima. He went by the name Larry. Even though Carmen was married, she and Larry became lovers. Carmen divorced Tom Murray in the spring of 2003. She claimed that Tom was the problem in the relationship, despite the fact that she was the one having the affair. Carmen wanted to take their daughter to California to live with Larry, which led to Carmen and Tom working with a mediator. They were trying to figure out this custody situation. Carmen moved to a house in Lawrence, Kansas, which is about 85 miles east of Manhattan, Kansas. Carmen's house was an American Foursquare, situated 0.6 miles from County Road 438 and about 500 feet from the nearest house. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On November 14, 2003, Carmen's lover, Larry Lima, contacted the Douglas County Sheriff's Office. He was in California at the time and was concerned about Carmen because he had not been able to reach her for a couple of days. Larry asked the police to conduct a welfare check. The police arrived at Carmen's house just after 1 p.m. They noticed that Carmen's motor vehicle was in the driveway. The police knocked on the door, but received no response. When they looked through a window, they saw a person's knee and what appeared to be blood. Officers made entry through the back door of the house. They found 40-year-old Carmen Ross on the floor in the living room. It appeared as though she had been beaten and stabbed to death. There was evidence of a struggle in the living room. For example, there were spots of blood on the ceiling, carpet, and walls. Potted plants were knocked over. A candle holder was broken, and the coffee table was partially flipped over the couch. Outside of the living room, nothing was out of place. The house was described as clean and well organized. There was no sign of forced entry. No murder weapon was found, and nothing was missing except for a knife from the knife block in the kitchen. An autopsy was performed. It revealed that Carmen had been stabbed 13 times in the neck and had 11 lacerations due to blunt force injury. The police believe that Carmen was murdered on November 13, the day before she was discovered. Their theory was that an attacker beat Carmen first, then went to the kitchen, retrieved the knife, and stabbed her to death. At about 7:30 p.m. on the day that the police discovered Carmen's body, November 14, they paid a visit to Tom Murray. He was an obvious potential suspect in this murder. He answered the door with his daughter in his arms. The police informed Tom that Carmen had died. He appeared to be distraught by this news. However, the police found it curious that Tom never inquired as to Carmen's cause of death. Tom agreed to be interviewed by the police and drove himself to the Riley County Police Station. This is the county where Manhattan, Kansas is located. The interview lasted about 9.5 hours. For the first 2 hours of the interview, Tom kept his right hand either in his lap or under his leg, like he was trying to prevent the officers from seeing it. The police observed a cut on Tom's little finger of his right hand, as well as bruises on both his wrists and arms. Tom explained the cut by saying there had been an incident with a pineapple. He was cutting the pineapple for his daughter and cut himself. As far as the bruises, Tom claimed that they were the result of bouncing his daughter on his knees. Tom offered details about his activities for the previous day. He told the police that they would find his DNA on Carmen's living room carpet. At around 10 p.m., still on November 14, the police drew attention to the fact that Tom had never asked how Carmen died. Tom indicated he did not want to know the details. About an hour later, the police asked Tom for consent to search his residence, his computer, his vehicle, as well as his office at Kansas State University. He gave them permission. Tom went on to explain what evidence the police might find. For example, he said Carmen's blood and fingerprints were in his vehicle. He claimed that a few weeks earlier, Carmen borrowed his car because it was blocking her vehicle in the driveway. She drove to Walgreens to get medicine for their daughter and had a nosebleed during the trip. Tom said that on his computer, the police would find searches related to murder because he was working on a television script for a show like CSI. Tom indicated that he never would have done anything like the police were suggesting because he was a thinking man. The police found this curious because they never suggested anything. Again, at this point, Tom didn't know how Carmen died. Tom continued by stating that if he was ever inclined to commit homicide, he would complete the job by using an airborne poison or something really slick. Later in the interview, Tom told the police he was, quote, having fun with this from a CSI perspective, unquote. At 12:30 a.m., now on November 15, Tom agreed to provide the police with a written statement. He asked an officer whether there were cameras and toll booths on Interstate 70. An officer told him that there were cameras. Tom replied, "That's all I need to know." When the statement was completed, Tom told the police that he failed to mention that on November 13, he drove on Interstate 70 in the morning. He was going to look at antique pillowcases. At around 3 a.m., Tom told the police that Carmen's blood would be found in his house. He claimed that she cut herself on Halloween when she was trying to cut a piece of candy for their daughter. Tom further explained that his blood would be in Carmen's house, specifically in her downstairs bathroom. On the previous Tuesday, he was at her house and picked a callus, which caused it to bleed. When the interview ended, the police did not have enough to charge Tom, but they certainly believed he was guilty. The police continued their investigation. They spoke to Kiara's babysitter, who indicated that on the morning of the homicide, Tom dropped his daughter off 30 minutes early. The police discovered an inconsistency regarding Tom's alibi. He said that he was at home grading tests all morning, but a few of his students at the university said he was grading papers in class. At the crime scene, all of the blood that was found belonged to Carmen, except for a drop on the baseboard of the downstairs bathroom. This drop contained at least two contributors, Carmen and an unknown male. Tom could not be excluded as a contributor. There was a footprint in blood just inside the front porch of Carmen's house. The police did not find any footwear consistent with this footprint at Tom's residence. The police examined Tom's computer and found some interesting activity. Between October 8 and November 10, 2003, Tom made a number of online searches, including colorless and odorless poison, homicide, poisoning and colorless and odorless and murder and perfect and tasteless, murder for hire, how to hire an assassin, how to kill somebody quickly and quietly, the best way to kill someone, and eye drops and murder and CSI. In August 2004, Tom was charged with first-degree murder. In March 2005, after a four-week trial, Tom Murray was convicted of first-degree murder. He was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 25 years. The good news for Tom is that he can start an antique pillowcase club in prison. Detention facilities are well known for their shortage of vintage bedding material. Prisoners may have an appreciation for pillowcases because they occasionally use them as weapons. They put heavy items in them and swing them at other people. Tom could be the equivalent of an antique weapons dealer. Carmen's lover, Larry Lima, died on April 23, 2011, at the age of 59. So, out of the three people involved in the love triangle, two are dead and one is in prison for life. Now moving to my analysis. Tom Murray has always maintained his innocence. His attorneys argued that there was essentially no evidence connecting Tom to the homicide of his ex-wife. Let's take a look at the evidence, both for and against the idea that Tom Murray was guilty of murder, starting with the inculpatory factors. Carmen had recently divorced from Tom after having an affair, which supplied Tom with a motive to commit homicide. In the time leading up to Carmen's murder, Tom made suspicious searches on his computer, which involved words like homicide and poison. The timing of the homicide does not look too good for Tom. On November 12, the day before the murder, Tom learned that Larry was moving to Lawrence, Kansas, and that eventually Carmen was going to move with Larry to California. Carmen was found brutally murdered in her home. There was no forced entry, no crime related to sex occurred, and nothing was missing except for a knife, presumably the knife that was used to kill her. The perpetrator appeared to specifically desire Carmen to be dead. There was no other apparent motive. Tom had injuries consistent with being in a struggle. He attempted to hide his injured hand from the police. Tom kept telling the police that they would find all kinds of inculpatory evidence, like suspicious searches on his computer, his DNA in Carmen's house, and her blood in his car. He did this before even knowing how Carmen died. Tom had sent a series of emails which suggested he was angry about Carmen's behavior. A friend of Tom said that she was unaware that Tom had any interest in antique pillowcases. Again, this was part of Tom's alibi. He changed his story after finding out about the cameras on Interstate 70 and insisted he was on an antique pillowcase hunting adventure. The blood on the bathroom baseboard was not conclusively matched to Tom, but he could not be excluded as a contributor. All other potential suspects were excluded. On the day of the murder, Tom dropped his daughter off 30 minutes early and returned to get her at noon. This left him enough time to make it to Lawrence, Kansas, commit the murder, and return to Manhattan, Kansas. Moving to the exculpatory factors, there were no witnesses to the murder, no video, no reliable physical evidence places Tom in Carmen's house. Tom's fingerprint was found on a bottle there, but the fingerprint could have been left there when Carmen still lived with Tom, like he put his fingerprint on the bottle and then she moved the bottle to that house in Lawrence, Kansas. Tom's curious searches did include the term CSI. Maybe he was actually conducting research to write a television script for a crime show. Tom was not worried about Carmen taking his daughter, or at least he should not have been. He had been told by the mediator that Carmen could leave Kansas, but she was not allowed to take their daughter with her. No footwear matching the footprint at the crime scene was found in Tom's home. There was a blood stain on the sink in Carmen's house, left by an unknown contributor. When considering all the evidence, do I think that Tom is guilty of murder? Yes, I believe he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. There was some doubt in this case, but not a reasonable doubt. Moving to the next question, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. The relationship between Tom and Carmen started with a power differential. He was a professor and she was a student. It was unethical for Tom to engage in this relationship. Over time, the couple grew apart. Tom continued his career and was eventually a tenured professor, while Carmen invested in New Age nonsense. When she met Larry, she believed that she found the love of her life. Once again, she was lost in fantasy. Her friends said that she was happier than anyone ever, happier than anyone should have ever been. It appears as though Carmen was experiencing euphoria. This is very common with infidelity. People involved in affairs believe they have found happiness. Everything will be fine. They have finally found what they're looking for. Unless they were looking for destruction, they are usually wrong with this assessment. As part of Carmen's fantasy land, she thought that she could simply take her daughter to another state. She was informed by the mediator how that wouldn't happen, but Carmen was resistant to appreciating reality. Tom felt uneasy about Carmen's threats to take their daughter. He was angry about the divorce. He was angry about the affair. He was not going to let Carmen have another victory. She cheated on him and she left him, but she was not going to get anything else. He was determined to stop her, even if he had to become homicidal. Knowing that Carmen would be moving to California soon, Tom made a number of internet searches about homicide. Realizing his mistake, he tacked on the acronym CSI on one of the search terms, believing this would excuse all the suspicious entries, like it was a magic addition that would erase inculpatory evidence. He might as well have typed the phrases definitely not for murder or searched for non-homicidal purposes only after his search terms. On the morning of November 13, 2003, Tom drove to Carmen's house. Carmen did not recognize that she was in danger because of her state of euphoria. She was getting ready to live her dream life. She was completely disconnected from Tom's feelings. She did not understand his interpretation of the situation and did not understand his anger. She lacked empathy and was highly self-focused. This put Carmen in a vulnerable position. Tom took advantage of this and murdered her. He was accustomed to exploiting her in a vulnerable position. That was how the relationship started. When the police approached Tom, he realized that they might not have found a lot of evidence against him. He allowed the interview to occur, hoping he could get information from the police. But of course, the interview only made him look guilty. Now moving to my final thoughts. This case highlights the dangers of infidelity-based euphoria, selfishness, and an overinvestment in nonsense. Carmen could have taken basic precautions considering how angry Tom was, but she was too lost in fantasy to recognize the danger. Maintaining a high level of empathy is not only useful for helping people, it can also be useful for remaining alive.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.